It's a real privilege to be here. Thank you so very much, sir. And Ma, thank you for inviting us. And special thanks to Dr. Popoola. You have been an excellent hostess. Thank you so very much. God bless you. Very grateful. I'm trying to find her. Looks like she's gone out again to do something else, you know. Thank you very much. You know, when I listen to citations like Professor Salami's, you know, people are of the view typically that when you have a passion for Jesus Christ, that you cannot succeed. But when you see people like this, it's extremely clear that in fact the people who are the most successful are the people who are able to ground themselves in the type of excellence that Jesus Christ actually enjoins us to have. You know, so, I mean, this was not part of my presentation, but, you know, I was just awed as I sat and I listened to that citation. I was really, really awed. And I think you folks who attend Cedar Generations are extremely privileged, you know, to be around this type of, not just anointing, but this type of capacity. And I certainly hope, you know, that you are drawing from it as much as possible. I certainly hope so, for whatever amount of time you are there. Thank you very much again for inviting us. Lekan, you promised me a laptop. Am I getting it, or do I need to get mine? Okay. While we're waiting for that, I have very fond memories of Ife. I didn't go to Ife. Great Ife, as you people like to call it. I went to one of those roadside state schools, Lagos State University, which the people who went to Ivy League universities like Ife, UI, etc., like to remind us that we are not only JJCs. In fact, they tell us we are secondary schools. But you know, one of my fondest memories of being at Ife was in 1992/93. That should be about 26 years ago now. I don't want to ask how many of us were born then. Okay. So I remember then, so two very fond memories that I have of Ife. One, I'll come back to the 92-93 piece, but one is the fact that my pastor also happens to have graduated from University of Ife in the late 60s to early 70s. And again, you know, maybe there's something about Ife that tends to graduate people who are able to combine success in life outside the church with success. Maybe it's Sports Center, because my sister told me a lot about the prayer meetings that used to happen at Sports Center. You know, I don't know what it is. And you know, every time my pastor talks about Ife, he talks about it with such fond memories. He was here as well, Engineer Folabi Oladele, former group executive director for NNPC, and a man with a heart for God. You know, so I'm really not surprised at what's happening here. The second fond memory I have, as I said, was 1992-93, when I came here as a year two, student of law. And what did we come for? We came for the Nigerian University's law debate at the time. And of course, there were quite a number of universities here. It was an extremely interesting and intensive debate. And guess who won? Ife now. You are making assumptions, though. Actually, it was Lasso that won. Okay. So sometimes, let me speak Yoruba a bit. Inu ikoko dudu, eko kunfu manjade, sometimes. But, I mean, the reason why I went down that lane was really to say, we're talking about change here. We're talking about things that are changing the world we live in. Things that are making the past almost look like, you know, when you think 80s and 90s these days, it's almost like 18th century. And I want to share a few slides with us and see if, so I talked about 92, 93. Let's look at some things from that time compared to some things from today. And let's see how much has really changed? Am I too far away? Aha. We don't have the flash. The flash is not here, so I'll just change it manually. Okay, so this is a picture from 1982 to 2010. What do we see? You can't see, I apologize, but at least most of the folks here can see. What do we see? The computer is huge, and the person is skinny. By 2010, the tables had changed. The person is huge, and the computer is... I mean, you can do almost everything on what now? On your phone, okay? That's in a space of 30 years. These are changes that used to take 100 years to happen. We're already starting to talk about some of the things that are changes in the times we're in. This one is interesting. What do we see? So, in those days, it was the shorts that were painted. Today, what is painted is the body. So changes are happening not just in technology. Changes are happening in the way we think, the way we dress, and the way we behave. Some of it is driven by technology. Some of it is driven by the fact that communication is so intertwined. Something that happens in the US today is immediately the rave in Nigeria tomorrow. It used to take 10, 15 years for these changes to happen. Okay? This is another interesting one. In 2009, a child that is playing with something up in the sky is probably playing with a kite, right? Today, what might it be? A drone. These are realities, am I correct? Okay. So I want us to get a sense of the context of the things we're going to be talking about. Aha, this one is interesting. In 1968, if a child came to school and stretched his hand at you in the US, what would he likely be giving his teacher? Flowers. In the US today, given what you know, if a child came to school and stretched the hand at you suddenly, what would you do? Take cover. Because it might be a gun. Okay? Changes are happening not just in technology, changes are happening in the entire fabric of society. And for us as believers or as young people, we need to try and understand these changes and position ourselves appropriately within that context. This is an interesting one. The younger people may not agree with me. You know, I think the guy on the left, the guy in the 40s, looks nicer. How many people disagree? How many people disagree? Because your pastors are here, you don't want to disagree now. But you know, the way we dress has changed. Okay? Thank you. This is another interesting one. When I was growing up, the TVs were huge. What was at the back of the TV was bigger than what was in front of the TV. To turn it on, in fact, when I was really small, to turn it on and to change the channels, you had to turn something, crank it round. By the time I was maybe in my 20s, you could press buttons. And then it started flattening. Today, the TVs are completely flat and thin. The people are huge, you know, because we're always sitting in front of the TV, nothing else to do. So, I'll end with this one. What do we see? In the earlier days, your mom had to come and drag you off the football field. Come inside now. These days, parents have to practically drag us away from the computer to go and do anything else. Am I correct? No, you are laughing. Very correct. I know I'm correct. Okay. What's my point? My point is that the world is changing, and it's changing at a much more rapid rate than it used to change. Today we talk about what? The fourth industrial revolution. How many people have heard that term? Pastor, please don't raise your hand. Anything I say here, you already know it. You know, how many people have heard of the term the fourth industrial revolution? Oh, wow. Really? Okay. So, you guys need education is beyond the four walls of a university. Please. What you folks need to know is that, and I'm going to be talking about that a bit. What employers are looking for today is people who have cognitive flexibility. Write it down. Cognitive flexibility. What does that mean? It means you can move from one space of knowledge, from one domain of learning to another very rapidly. And even within them, you have learning agility, which means you learn very quickly and you self-learn. That's what employers are looking for. You're a great engineer, fine. You came out with, in fact, you're not even a great engineer, you're a great engineering graduate because they are two different things. I might have graduated with the first class in engineering and end up being a useless engineer. Am I correct, sir? So, what makes the difference? What makes the difference is the ability to use that learning and the ability to continue to learn. Dr. Popol, I think, or no, it was the other young lady, I forget her name, the young lady that was introducing the people from Akoka, that said that she was very impressed with the lecturer that is here. And, you know, lifelong learning is what is going to keep us successful. You better start lifelong learning, a mindset of lifelong learning, especially in this day and age when changes are happening with such rapidity. Before you finish learning today's own, the next change has happened. My children have never seen a world without smartphones. Do you know what that means? What that means is that their entire context is around things that can take data, hundreds of thousands of unit points of data, process it in nanoseconds, and churn out information. That's the world we're living in. And the reality of it is that what that means is that people need to learn faster. And their learning has to be self-motivated. Why did I go down that lane? Because I'm surprised that at university, at Great Ife, I only have one person who has heard of the fourth industrial revolution. Please change that, okay? Because it's impacting everything we do. So that shows us, I mean, I'm sure we would have heard about the industrial revolution, generally speaking. Okay, I know that won't be unusual for us. Basically, the industrial revolutions happened in three phases. The first, unfortunately, those of you who are over there can't see it. The first was around mechanization, steam, power, getting things to work mechanically as opposed to using hands. So maybe you do sewing machines instead of sewing with hands. So it made things faster, etc. Then the second one was around mass production and assembly lines. So you then had things like General Motors starting to make things. Instead of making a full car before you sell it, you make engines and you make tires and then you're assembling them all together. So you started talking about assembly lines and mass production. Then the third industrial revolution was around automation, computers, electronics. And that was the industrial revolution that we grew up around. The sort of things that made people like Bill Gates, etc., famous. Now, some people are of the view that we're still in the third industrial revolution, but the truth is that because there are so many different technologies now that are interacting to create things, we have actually moved and are stepping into a different industrial revolution that was birthed out of the third industrial revolution, and it's called the fourth industrial revolution, okay? And it's around cyber physical systems, it's around Internet of Things, it's around networks, artificial intelligence, robotics, humanoid robots, etc. Okay? So the speed of the internet is so vast and strong that I can be sitting here in Ife and I'm listening to music that is being played in the US. Okay? So that's the context of the fourth industrial revolution. Now, the interesting thing is that despite this, take a look at the situation in Africa. So, juxtapose these two slides. What you have up there, for those who cannot see, this is a 2014 report, and I assure you it's not any better today, on employment and employability by the African Employers Task Force. There are 203 million unemployed people in Africa. Three quarters of them are below 24. What does that mean? 75% of unemployment is within your age group. It means that when you leave school, it's very likely that you're going to be one of these numbers, unless something is different. 75% of unemployment in Africa is within the 24-year-old and below. At the same time, we had 73 million jobs created in Africa in 2014. Only 25% went to persons below 24 years old. That's actually a bit different from what is happening in other parts of the world. There are reports from elsewhere. There's a KPMG report on youth employment that basically says that by 2020, 50% of the entire world workforce will be people below 35. But unfortunately, that is skewed more towards the developed economies than the developing. So, this is the most pressing issue for our economies today if we are to avoid serious social crisis. You know, a lot of us think that, you know, all this Boko Haram thing is actually religious. Some of it is, but actually a lot of it is economic. You know, a lot of it is economic. The point I'm making, friends, is that on the one hand, there is a radical revolution going on in terms of industry and in terms of the job market. On the other hand, in the climate in which we live, there is huge unemployment. So what does that mean for me and for you as young people who are growing out of the schools, out of Ivy League schools like this, to meet this sort of world? That's the question we're going to try and answer today. Okay, let's move. So, fine, there's a fourth industrial revolution. So what? The first thing that we need to realize is a lot of people get very worried and very scared that robots are going to replace human beings. In some cases, yes, that is what is going to happen. However, the more the research happens, the opinion is that actually they're going to augment what human beings can do. What does that mean? It means that, yes, some jobs are going to be lost, but it also then means that some other types of jobs are going to be created. And that is where you folks need to be looking at. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. I would recommend to you, after you leave here, do a Google search on the World Economic Forum, Future of Work. You've looked at it. Excellent. Take a look at it. World WEF Future of Jobs Report. Look at the most recent one, the one for 2018. You may not be able to read everything. It's about a 160-page report. But read the executive summary. It's about 6 pages. And it's going to give you a view of the type of jobs that are going to be in higher demand over the next 5 years through to 2022, from 2018 to 2022. Because that information is readily available, I'm not going to waste our time telling you what those jobs are. Go take a look at them. There are other things I want to deal with. Overall, jobs across the world are going to increase by about 100 million. So even though jobs are being lost due to robotics, the prognosis is that overall jobs are going to increase because new type of jobs are going to exist. However, the interesting thing is that when the experts are looking at this, you found it, very good. When the experts are looking at this, there are a couple of things that jumps out very quickly to them. One is that the type of learning that is being done today in many of our higher institutions is grossly outdated. That's the truth. With all apologies to the academics in the room, grossly outdated. By now, our curricula should have changed significantly. Okay? But we can all sit here and complain about it, or we can choose to do something about it ourselves. Okay? So that's why, again, this issue about learning for ourselves is critical. So I take what I get from here, and then I go look for what I cannot get from here elsewhere. Okay? We'll talk about that a bit more. Now, technical skills are some of the key areas. But you know what is interesting? What is interesting is that beyond the issue of skills around tech, you know, all these techie skills, beyond that, actually, the World Economic Forum found that the most important skills in the future of work are what we call core skills. Not your technical skills. It's your core skills. And what are these core skills? Okay? I'm going to share two slides with you. One describes... Okay, so let's just go there. How many of us are familiar with LinkedIn? A good number of us. Very good. I see that there's something about LinkedIn on the program today. Excellent, because LinkedIn is one of the... It's a great way to get into the world of work. Now, one of the LinkedIn folks did... I hope I'm not messing up your recording by moving up and down. Thank you very much. So the LinkedIn folks did a bit of research, again, using AI, with all sorts of algorithms. They pulled data, and they found that the folks who... They matched the sorts of jobs that were being posted and the skills that employers were looking for with the people that were eventually hired using some complex algorithms. And what they found is that these were the top 10 skills that employers were looking for. So they made the assumption that if you say you're an engineer, you're an engineer. Fine, we have your degree, we've seen it. We can test for that. But more importantly, they're saying there are skills that are more important than my academic and technical qualifications. So this is based on what is happening today on LinkedIn. Now let me move us further, okay? Let me move us further. I can leave this slide deck, you know, so if you can't write everything, at least you'll be able to get, but just write what is not there, write what is occurring to you, you know, from it. I'll move us further. Now part of the World Economic Forum report basically listed 10 skill clusters that will be the top 10 skills that you need to have to thrive in the future of work by 2022. And that's the list I'm showing you there. How many of these are taught on your campus? Some? I'm sure some will probably be. Some will be. Some may not be. So you have, for those who cannot see it, analytical thinking and innovation. I suspect you'll find more of it being taught in the school in which Daddy is the vice chancellor now than probably the traditional schools. Okay? So sometimes when we want to go to Ivy League schools, let's do our research very well and make the decisions based on the right criteria. Okay? Analytical thinking and innovation. Active learning and learning strategies. Things are going to change too rapidly for somebody to be teaching you everything. Creativity, originality, and programming. Critical thinking and analysis. So there's analytical thinking and then there's critical thinking. Analytical thinking means, how does this work? Critical thinking is, what is bad about it? How can we change it? Okay? Complex problem solving. Okay? Complex problem solving. Leadership and social influence. It's interesting that in a world where it's all about tech, robotics, etc., things like leadership and social influence are going to be top 10 skills in 2022. Why is that? Because more and more, the people who are going to move ahead are those who can influence people around them. Both in the world of work, because very soon robots are going to be walking side by side with human beings. How do you manage those sorts of transitions? Emotional intelligence, reasoning, problem solving, and ideation. That's a new word. Ideation. It means the ability to churn out ideas, and not just churn out ideas that don't mean anything. The ability to then reflect, step back, and critically analyze your own ideas and grow them. Am I correct, sir? So ideation is more and more going to be, and that's why you have all these tech entrepreneurs are the ones that are, you know, growing to the people who can think outside of the box, who are not limited by what they know. Okay? Systems analysis and evaluation. Interesting that that should be number 10. You know, in the sort of world that we're talking about. But you know, the point is that I wanted you to see what the World Economic Forum is saying about the future of jobs and the skills that will be needed. It's not going to be any different in Nigeria. Okay? In that WEF report, you might find it, or you might Google the Africa, sub-Saharan Africa. Take a look at the particular area around sub-Saharan Africa and see what it says about the future skills required in there. Okay. So what does this mean for us? Everything that I'm writing here, I've already said it. You know, so I'm not going to bother to go down that lane. You need to self-manage. You need to be agile, resilient, etc. There's no need for me to dwell on this. We've talked about the fact that, so this one I didn't talk about. Jobs which have traditionally occupied the middle of the skills hierarchy are declining. What does that mean? So take Africa, for example. You can see a disparity. You still have subsistence farming, am I correct? And you have factory workers, daily paid factory workers. On the other spectrum, in the same Africa, you have extremely highly paid, highly regarded techpreneurs. Yeah? People who are using, so Gokada, right? Gokada is not really an Okada company. It's a platform economy. That's the truth. So what they are selling is not the Okada. What they are selling is the convenience platform and the algorithms that enable you use them. Okay? So you have those two ends of the pole. Now, in the past, you used to have a middle, right? Your middle type, not so highly skilled, maybe not so skilled. But what the reports are saying to us today is that that middle is going to disappear very quickly because of more adoption of technology in some areas and some areas being left behind. So for those of us who are coming out of the educational system, the choice we have in prior times was to start at that middle. That option is not going to be very open to us very much any longer. It's closing, okay? So we need to think about that. I think I've talked about everything else here. The last thing I'd like to address on this point is we need to embrace what I call a new career paradigm. people like Daddy, sir, when did you start at IFE? 1982. I was probably, this is about 10 years old at that time. And you were at IFE till last year, probably. You are here till when, sir? Till last year. So he must have spent over 30 years. Aha. So probably about 30 years at IFE. And that was the way careers were built at that time. You needed to put in your time, be consistent, do the work that needs to be done, do the learning, and grow. Guys, careers are not going to grow like that anymore. So we have what is called the postmodern approach to building careers. I need to start thinking about that. In the first place, companies are not hiring people that are going to stay 30 years. You know why? Because technology is changing so rapidly. Now, I can get some, it's cheaper for me to go and, so a company in the US is manufacturing in China. So they are using contractors. I can sit at home and work. I don't have to be. I have a friend who's working for some US company from Nigeria. She's on a contract. She's not going to be on that type of contract for 20 years. You get a project job done and you move. A lot more and more, that's the way work is going to be organized. What does that mean? It means that you and I have to be more agile, remembering that my career is actually in my hands and not in the hands of an employer. So I have to consciously and deliberately design the sort of career that I'm looking for. And that's why I call it the postmodern approach, lifelong learning and reevaluation. What are the principles? Careers are not chosen, they are constructed. If you look at my resume, and I'm very proud of it, even though it pales when I look at, you know, some resumes. Why do I say I'm very proud of it? Because I've worked in various different areas. My background was law. I worked in finance. I worked in admin. I worked in HR. At the same time, I was growing a volunteer career in nonprofit management, special events production. It's called boutique careers. So today, when I choose to step out on my own, I have options. Am I communicating, guys? Please. So very important, careers are not chosen, but they are constructed. They are built brick by brick throughout life through the series of choices about learning and work. And do not underestimate the power of volunteering. Do not underestimate it. I never forget to tell people that some of the top skills that I have learned are from years of volunteering experience. And I move those skills to work. I take the skills from work into my volunteering experience. So when they ask you to come and do something, don't look for what you're going to gain from it. Do it. And do it with your heart. And learn from it. It's critical. Whether it's in church, many times we discountenance the things that we do in church and think that we are doing pastor a favor. You're doing yourself a favor, by the way. I don't want to get into preaching mode. So let me move. Okay, there's also the entrepreneurship piece. So, you know, many times when we're talking about stuff like this, you're thinking it's about jobs. It's always about jobs. How many people are going to be employed? You have 200 million unemployed youth. You have how many jobs being created per year? So the truth is that for a lot of us, the path is actually going to be entrepreneurship from the get-go. And even for companies that are employing people, they want people with an entrepreneurial mindset. Can you chart your own path? Okay? I wanted to get us thinking around that area. Remember, we're talking about the labor market. We're talking about opportunities for Nigerian graduates. One thing that many times we forget to mention when we're talking about these issues is ethics. One of the key things, believe it or not, that employers are looking for is people that can work ethically. It may not look like that when we look at the politics of our nation, but it is the truth. Even a thief is looking for an honest man to keep his money. Okay? So, I was at an... Obina, let me know when I have 10 minutes left, please. I do have 10 minutes, thank you. I was at an event where a lady that I respect very, very strongly was speaking, and it was a privilege. It was just about 20 of us that were in that room. Mrs. Awoshika, Ibukun Awoshika. Some may not know she's a pastor, but she is. You know. So again, you are seeing this trend of pastors, people who love God and who are very highly regarded in their work. Mrs. Awoshika was the first woman to head First Bank. She's the chairman of First Bank. The first woman and the youngest person ever to be appointed as chairman of First Bank. First Bank is the biggest bank in Nigeria. I know when a bank is the biggest bank in Nigeria, it's probably the biggest bank in Africa. Okay? Now, one of the things that she shared with us in that room was how did she get on the radar of First Bank? She got on the radar of First Bank from years before. She didn't realize it. In the days when she started the chair center, you know, she was an entrepreneur, she started off the chair center. In the days she started, she refused to do business the way people were doing it. everybody, at least most people, were doing business cutting corners. When they want to import, the people who are importing on their behalf would would pay lower duty than what was being actually charged. Of course, the excuse or the reason is that, but the government is charging too much, which was probably true. But you know what happened? One day, she found out that her import her agent brought a document. Typically, she would just sign the documents. That day, she decided to look at it. And then she saw that. She looked at it. She saw one document. She saw another one. She said, what's going on here? Anyway, to cut a very long story short, the bottom line was that the gentleman was basically trying to help her and was finding a way to pay less than what was actually charged by encouraging the customs officers. I don't want to use all that, by encouraging the customs officers. So she then said, no, no, no. The man said, but who pays? How can you import something for, say, $1,000 and you're paying $1,000 duty on it? It's not, it's wrong, it's unfair. She said, is this what is the official correct duty? Yes. She said, pay this. She insisted. In fact, she then said, I took him off that job for about 6 months because I wanted to make sure that what I said was being done. It looked like she was daft, stupid, unwise, raising her costs. But it was things like that that then got her on the radar when importation of certain things was banned in Nigeria. And she had to go to her partners and say to them, we need to set up a company here. I cannot import anymore. Come, let's set up a company here. They did not want to come to Nigeria because their experiences of Nigerians were very poor. They had a very, very bad view. But then one of them said, but we know Ibukun, her track record shows that she does ethical business. And that's how she was able to get Sokoa, which was a big French furniture manufacturing company, to come and set up in Nigeria, became her partners. So that's why it became Sokoa Chair Center. Integrity. Ethics. And those were the things that then got her. She didn't know people were watching. When they were then deciding, oh, who can we appoint to the board of ABC company? Her name came up in 2-3 different places. She never knew. Okay? What's my point, people? The ethics question is critical for us, especially as believers. Because we need to remember that we are representing Jesus Christ in the marketplace. I love the vision of Cedar's generation. I absolutely love it. Streetwise apostles. That's what we're supposed to be. That is actually the mandate for all of us as believers. All this fighting inside church and fighting for pulpits. The pulpit is outside. It's there everywhere. You know, so friends, the ethics question is critical. But it's not just critical for us as believers. It is good business. That's my point. Ethics is good business. Let people know there are companies today that are built by simply saying we don't buy from certain types of people. If you there are some diamond, there are people who shop, some shops in the UK will not stock diamonds from certain companies because they say that they buy blood diamonds. So if people who are not even believers are taking the stance of ethical business, how much more us? So that's one of the things that we should think about critically as a critical skill when we're going forward on the issues of labor and employability. I want to talk a bit about resumes. I only have 5 minutes, so I'm going to go through it very quickly. Let's talk about resumes. So this one I found very interesting. I changed the light bulb. Would you write that on your resume? Or would you write, single-handedly managed the successful upgrade and deployment of a new environmental illumination system with zero cost overruns and zero safety incidents. Interesting. It's funny, but it illustrates something that I think is very important about resumes. And I'll take us through it very quickly. I'm going to skip the whole ethics thing. There were some conversations I wanted us to have around ethics, but I won't go down that lane. Oops. Excuse me. There we go. Now, let's talk about resumes. A couple of things around resumes. The first thing is that simplicity and ease on the eyes is critical. Okay? When you're writing your CV, simplicity and ease on the eyes. What do I mean by ease on the eyes? Let it look good. I look at the HR people that are reviewing your resume. Remember, what we're doing now is we're transitioning. We've talked about the type of skills that will be required. We've talked about the ethics question. Now we're saying, how do you even present these skills to the people that are going to be looking at them? As an HR person, I'm looking at hundreds of CVs. Believe me, I'm not going to waste time on your CV if it's badly formatted. It says to me that you're not careful. So I just put it aside. You may be the best thing since sliced bread, but I will put it aside. So very importantly, simplicity and ease on the eyes. Typographical errors is a sin in a CV. It is a mortal sin in a CV. Read your CV 20 times before you send it out. One thing that I've learned, everybody makes typos. Everybody. So one thing that I've learned is when I'm in a rush and I've written something, don't send it out. Put it away, keep it. You will be shocked at what you will see 2 hours later when you go back to it yourself. If possible, give it to somebody else to take a look at, but never send out your CV with typographical errors. Your font, don't make the font too small, don't make it too big. Make it easier, and don't go and use cursive font in a CV. You know, use professional font. There are all sorts of templates on Google now that you can use. Pick one that works for the type of industry that you're trying to go into. One critical thing for us, especially as young people, is less is more on a CV. Write it down. Less is more. I looked at a CV of somebody who was a fresh graduate and it was 8 pages, and I thought to myself, this guy does not know what he's doing. I just dropped it. He doesn't know what he's talking about. What experience does he have? What's he writing in there for 8 pages? Come on. Come on. You know, less is more. What does that mean? What we are interested in is, what have you done and how well did you do it? I'm not particularly interested in, so let's take my resume. So I write in there that I was HR manager for Adax Petroleum. So what? What that simply helps you to think about is, okay, if she was working for Adax Petroleum, she probably must have been a good HR manager. But how do you know I wasn't getting C- appraisals all through? You don't know. So what should I do? What I need to then do is, what are the things I achieved as HR manager for Adax Petroleum? So at most, for each job, simply putting one line around, this was the job I did. Then you state the things you achieved. What did you do? Quantify it. Quantify, qualify, numbers. How many people did you manage? What was the payroll? I'm giving you examples that are familiar to me. You'll be able to translate it to yours. What was the value of payroll? What happened newly during that time? When I was HR manager for Vetco Grade, that was when the new Pensions Act came out. And we had to manage the transition to a totally new terrain. That I made sure I highlighted that very clearly on my CV. People are looking for people who have managed that transition. Do you get the point I'm making, people? The point is, highlight your experience, your skills. Now, I know the question that is going to come out is, I don't have any experience. I'm a fresh graduate. It's not true. It's not true. What are the volunteering opportunities that you've taken part in? What are the critical skills that those showed? Did I do while I was at last, when last was closed for 18 months, I managed my mom's shop at Alade Market. Entrepreneurial skills. Within 3 months, the woman was coming to shop at 12. So I was managing the whole shop. What did you learn? So you don't assume you don't have skills. The question is, what have I learned? What have I done? And then what are It could be a club. That it was something that I led. Am I making sense, guys? Very, very important, okay? I think my time is up. Okay, so I'm going to need to stop here. I will share the slides, and we can take it from there. Thank you very much for listening.